Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
I want to go to John Wall. Good afternoon to you, John. How are you?
Good afternoon, Niall. Welcome back.
Thank you very much indeed, John. Well, when I say how are you, you can't be too good, obviously, because you're in stage four of prostate cancer, which is certified as incurable. And how are you feeling?
To be quite honest with you, Niall, I'm actually feeling very good.
Okay, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The last couple of weeks in particular, energy levels, frame of mind, the body and mind, I'm doing really well at the moment. It has its ups and downs, depending on what treatment you're on at any specific moment in time. But for the moment, doing really well, thanks.
Well, look, you're a father of three, and I'll get to the medical card in a moment, but just for people who are not familiar with your own story, John, when were you diagnosed first, or what was the symptoms that made you want to go to the doctor? Because I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there, because it's prostate cancer, and something that men suffer from, quite common, actually more common than we probably imagine. What were the symptoms, and what made you want to go to your doctor in the first place?
Sure, that's very, very important, and that was practically to the day 2 years ago. I had a problem with my right leg. I thought it was nerve issue, sciatica, something along those lines. So I wasn't one to frequent the GP's office that often, but for whatever reason I did on that particular day. It was 25th of July 2017, and it became apparent very quick that there was a problem with my lymph nodes. They were inflamed as a result of the cancer itself having spread from the prostate to my lymphatic system. So within a period of about 3 days or so, I guess our lives changed.
So, and I'm sure you can remember that day where you were diagnosed and brought into that room and told, listen, there's a problem. I mean, that must have been an awful day.
I remember very well. And actually, the human brain has an incredible mechanism of protecting itself and yourself. I was brought into a room. I was on my own, and I was asked that question, have you anybody else with you? And I would have heard it thousands of times on TV, people discussing it or whatever. And it never resonated with me for a second that there was anything wrong. It took several days for it to actually sink in.
Surely when you hear the words, is there anybody with you, you know that's going to be bad news, don't you? Or you certainly news that are difficult to handle, yeah.
You would have assumed so, absolutely. And no, it didn't. It honestly didn't. I went into protection mode, and I when I reflect on it now, I remembered bits and pieces, but I chose, I guess my brain chose not to remember the important bits. But in any event, I was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer, and from that day to this, I've learned a lot about the disease. I try and help others. But
are you young, by the way? Are young, you're 48, but are you young to have prostate cancer? What is the average age for diagnosis?
There's a thing, For what I have, you'd be looking at mid to late 50s and beyond at the very earliest. But I'm very young to have it. However, you're never too young to get it. And we don't have a national screening program. We don't have a great awareness program.
That's surprising, isn't it? It is surprising when you consider we have national screening programs for cervical cancer or for breast check or, when it comes to women. And this is something that does affect men, testicular cancer and prostate cancer, which is testicular cancer is less common, obviously, and less dangerous too. But certainly prostate cancer can be life-ending and life-threatening.
Very important, Niall. Yeah, the numbers are actually quite staggering that behind skin cancer, prostate cancer is the second most prevalent cancer in Ireland, with over 3,500 cases every year, ahead of lung, breast, bladder, and several more, which is significant in itself. And yet the awareness surrounding prostate cancer ranks almost at the bottom of the list. But that's something that a group of us are trying to change. We're using social media channels, interviews, whatever we can get our hands on, to create the awareness necessary that will ensure that others avoid situations that I find myself in, I and my family find myself in.
I heard something recently, and maybe you can correct this, maybe it's a myth, and I don't know how true it is, that the majority of men, when they die, be it of old age, it's sort of 75 or 80 or 90, whatever it is when we die, actually end up with prostate cancer anyway, that many men actually have prostate cancer, just don't even know that they have it.
Very true. Depending on which stat you read, 1 in 7 or 8 men in Ireland will be either diagnosed with it or die with prostate cancer, but not from it at some point in their lives. Mm-hmm. So it's incredibly prevalent out there. And as I said, very, very little awareness surrounding it.
Okay, so let's get back to you, John, and your prognosis. You're at stage four prostate cancer. What is the, I mean, it's considered to be incurable. So what do you do? How do you keep it at bay, or how do you live with that? Or what's the long-term prognosis for you?
Okay, well, you just mentioned something there that's very important for me, and that's living with it. And I do live. And, you know, my family and I, we have good lives. I'm very fortunate to have a very compassionate employer, something that's not so for a lot of people, that, you know, whether they be self-employed, et cetera, that don't have the same level of support that I have in relation to myself. The treatment that I underwent, initially the chemotherapy, I had to travel abroad for surgery because the route that I we travelled, the surgery itself was unavailable in this country.
You're not the first person to say that to me, by the way. I've heard, I have a friend of mine who travelled abroad for surgery to Spain with prostate cancer as well. So that seems to be quite common too. What's the issue here in Ireland? Is there a certain surgery that we don't provide or we can't provide?
Yes, basically that's it. The skills, well, what I was told was that the skill set that's necessary for the type of surgery that I require is not available in this country. It's not something that's done. So we travelled to Belgium. For the surgery, and in my case, you know, when I asked a consultant recently if I did not travel for that surgery at that point in my treatment program, where would I be now? And I was told to be in palliative care.
And so, what is that surgery? Is that having kind of nodes removed or polyps removed or cancerous polyps removed? Or what do they actually do in that surgery?
Yeah, in my particular case, it was called a radical. Well, first of all, because the cancer had spread, distant lymph nodes. The standard of care in this in Ireland is that following chemotherapy, you follow then a course of treatment for a hormone treatment, basically, because it's a hormone-driven cancer. But abroad, the standard of treatment is they throw the absolute kitchen sink at it. And because I was young, they felt that because the chemotherapy had worked its own wonders, that I was a candidate and my body would be able to take the surgery. What happened was they removed my prostate in what's called a radical open prostatectomy, and also they took away 61 of my lymph nodes.
Okay.
And it worked, basically. My quality of life now is significantly better.
Although your quality of life is better, and I'm sure your diet has to change with that as well, the certain things, you know, you have to obviously watch what you eat, et cetera, et cetera. In relation to your prognosis, your long-term prognosis, how does that affect your long-term prognosis now?
Well, as I said to you earlier, it's curable. It's manageable. My apologies. It's not curable.
It's livable.
It's manageable. And I live with it.
Right.
So, I have a family, so I don't discuss. The time frame element to it. But
we have had
those discussions, and that's something that that we live with, and we live with quite successfully. I hasten to add, because you know, you could turn around and sit in a corner, feel sorry for yourself, etc. But I and my family have chosen to do otherwise.
Yeah, and try and move on with life. Yeah, and live your life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, the main reason I wanted to talk to you, of course, today was because medical card. Now, obviously, you incur quite a lot of expenses because living with something like prostate cancer obviously involves taking medication. It involves services and from the HSE, et cetera, et cetera, which are all costly. And, you know, you should have a medical card. You wouldn't wonder, but certainly imagine. But on two occasions, it's been taken off you.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, first of all, I never had a sense of myself, a sense of entitlement. I just wanted to get a few answers surrounding.
Well, you're entitled to basic healthcare, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm fortunate enough to have a good job and a compassionate employer, so I wasn't saying, you know, I demand a card. However, on saying that, I was issued an emergency medical card based on my diagnosis, and it was revoked after 6 months.
And what was the reason? Did they give you a reason for revoking it?
Yeah, basically because it was means tested. That's the only thing that I can assume at the moment, because subsequently when I appealed it, I submitted quite a bit of additional information in terms of wage slips, bank statements. They looked for quite a bit of detail.
And what is the threshold? If you don't mind me asking, what's the threshold for is it 34,000, 35,000 or something?
Something along those lines. I can't. However,
but you wouldn't be long onto your money if you were paying for medication all the time. you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
An emergency medical card, in my own situation, based on terminal diagnosis, is not subject to a means test, which is pivotal in this, because they did ask for stuff that I didn't think, looking back in it now, they had any right to ask for. An emergency medical card at the time was valid, if given, was valid for 18 months and issued within 24 hours, not subject to a means test. And that's where, I suppose, this issue started for me, in that when I looked back at the original application, this was only about 4 months ago, but hold on a second here, this doesn't add up. So I began to do my own little bit of investigating, made a few phone calls, and that has led us to the point today, because I took a case to the Ombudsman's office, which I have to say wasn't hugely successful. I found the HSE were pulling the strings in that regard. That's still a live case. But in relation to my correspondence with the HSE, I got the runaround completely, and they kept asking me for more information.
And what sort of information do they want from you, apart from what you earn? What sort of information do they want from you?
They wanted confirmation of my diagnosis, despite the fact that they're my primary healthcare provider at the moment.
So I'm pretty sure they can look up your records themselves and find these things out. Now, I don't know what data protection is like, but
I'm sure there are GDPR issues, but in any event, I said repeatedly, this whole issue surrounds the issuance of the original emergency medical card. And just clarification around why they did, what they did, when they did. And I could not get answers. They wanted more and more and more
information. What evidence do you need to prove that, you know, I have cancer? I mean, what, a letter from your doctor saying he has cancer? Which I'm sure you provided them
with. A GP or consultant's letter, which I did provide them with. I actually went so far as to the Ombudsman's office to provide them with my surgical notes from my surgeon in Belgium, which states very specifically what I have been diagnosed with in black and white. And after that point, I said no more. And that was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Ongoing situation where you're going to constantly need to use medication or constantly need to visit your doctor for checkups, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So you gave them an ultimatum basically last week and warned them that if you didn't get any sort of explanation, that you're going to go public, which you're now doing.
Yes. On Friday last verbal correspondence I had was at 4:30. Actually, this is my birthday. At 4:30 on Friday evening, I was talking to a representative from the medical card section, and I said, if a supervisor didn't ring me back, now this is, bear in mind, this was the culmination of of many months of ongoing dialogue, etc. So I said, if someone didn't ring me back by 5 p.m. that evening, I said, I'm going public. And that's not the first time that I had said that. And I did also say, you know, this might get a bit of traction. And I said, you know,
it's not going to look good for the HSE, no.
Yeah, I said, it's in all our best interest to try and resolve this amicably. And that's not to say that I was going to get a card out of it.
No, and let me be clear, you don't want any special treatment or anything like
not
that.
At all.
No, you
not
just want, you, I mean, I think anybody in your situation, be it somebody with prostate or breast cancer or cervical cancer, whatever it happens to be, should be entitled to basic free healthcare. I mean, that's just kind of logical, I think, I would have imagined anyway.
I wouldn't say no to it, put it that way.
Well, no, I mean, because it doesn't matter what you earn, it still costs a lot of money, and you're paying your taxes. You're living in a country where you pay PRSI and you pay PAYE or whatever it is you happen to be doing, or self-employed. So you're paying your taxes, and you're entitled to basic healthcare.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about just basic respect as well, and that costs nothing. That's free. And in this case, there was no phone call back. So on Saturday morning, I put out a tweet that, to my astonishment, so many people started to...
Gathered quite a lot of traction, yes.
An awful lot of traction, and continues too. It's still going wild out there, which, in hindsight, as I've said many times this morning, in hindsight, I think this is a very good thing.
I think it draws attention to it, not just for you, but I'm sure there's lots of other John Walls out there as well, or Mary Walls, for that matter, who are in that situation.
That's exactly the point. The point that, as an advocate, a patient advocate, which I've been for some time, whether it be, prostate issues, vaccine issues, whatever the case may be, this has landed in my lap. And I speak now on behalf of so many patients, terminal and otherwise, that find the system incredibly difficult to navigate at a time in their lives when they should be helped through it, not dragged through it. And that's where I come in, and others besides. But in this instance, I want answers, and I want to be able to relay those answers to the people through social media, which seems to be have become an invaluable tool for advocacy. Certainly that's what I found. Anyway, so many people have reached out and so many stories out there of similar
Let me read a text here that just came in just while you're talking. I'm a pharmacist practicing in the Midwest region. I have to draw your attention to a silent scandal currently happening in the HSE. Medical card patients are losing their medical cards. Coming to the expiry of a current medical card, the HSE sends letters to remind patients to renew. Patients are not receiving these letters. They lose the medical card, have to cut down on essential medicines and pay privately. The scandal is that these letters are not being actually sent to people in the first place. The HSE are telling lies once again. I know of dozens of patients who are suffering. I ask you to get people who have experienced this scandal to contact your station to get it out in the open. I do not want to identify myself or reveal myself for obvious reasons. She's a pharmacist, or he's a pharmacist, in the Midwest region. So obviously they're saying that, obviously from the HSE point of view, they're not sending the letters out telling people to renew them. So there's an issue, an ongoing issue, this person believes, where the HSE are trying to reduce the amount of people who are getting free healthcare or free getting medical cards.
Yeah, and actually I've had similar correspondence, not just from pharmacists, but from HSE professionals that have expressed concerns about certain elements of the way the medical card scheme is being run.
But what I can't understand is, I know of people who are getting medical cards who don't actually deserve them. Now, that sounds wrong, maybe in the way I'm wording it, but it's not necessary for them to have them, if you know what I mean.
Well, I do. Well, listen, we all have opinions as to whether someone should or should not, but the point being, if the system was fit for purpose, let the system decide, and that's where the system is broken at the moment, that we don't have trust in a system that needs us to have trust in. We need to trust the people that make those decisions, and certainly with regards to medical cards, it would appear the system is breaking down. Trust has broken down.
There was that famous, very famous problem with Enda Kenny just before he finished up as Taoiseach, where the young chap who had Down syndrome had his medical card taken off him. Now, he got it back subsequently, and that was on 6-1 News. Of course, Enda Kenny was exposed on that particular occasion at the time when that young man had his medical card taken off him. But it does seem to be a huge problem. So you're hoping to hear back from them, I believe, by 2 o'clock today.
Yeah, in fairness, they have been in touch this morning. Well, actually, I let them know. There was a lot of interviews, etc., this morning. So yeah. I said to them that I will contact me basically after 2 o'clock. Now, on saying that, I see no reason to keep this private. This is something that I chose. Well, I have no option but to go public on. So I want everyone to be aware as well that whatever response I get, it won't be private. Good, bad, or indifferent. This is something that everyone needs to know. How to deal with something, and if something like this happens to someone else, okay, what are the repercussions? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what's going to happen? So, as I said on Twitter on numerous occasions over the last few days, I will be letting people know how this goes and other issues besides. There are other issues now that have transpired as a result of conversations over the last.
Well, I'm really glad you've raised the issue, because a lot of people maybe weren't aware of this. Now, I know this has been kind of bubbling in the background over the last few years. People who genuinely deserve to have medical cards are having them revoked for whatever reason and struggling to get them back again. And I think, in circumstances where people happen to have a decent enough job, it doesn't really matter. If you have a diagnosis, which is an incurable diagnosis like your own, I mean, healthcare can be expensive. And either way, the country should be able to cover that bill for you. And I genuinely believe that. I wish you well, John, in the future. And I wish you good health in the future, if that's of any help to you. I hope you get what you want.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. And thanks for the opportunity to continue to raise the issues that that need to be raised.
All right, thank you very much. So we'll keep in touch and let us know how you get on with the HSE. Maybe we'll have a chat again to you during the week, all right?
Certainly will.
Hey, thanks very much indeed. I just want to go to Donna before I go to the break as well. Donna, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, Donna?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
You're in a similar situation.
Yeah, they took the medical card off my mom and dad. Once my mom was 60, she was diagnosed with a tumour in her lung and she had to have it removed. He took it off my mom and dad. My dad would have been 65 at the time because he was €4 over.
€4? Over the threshold?
Yeah, because his army pension pushed him over. Like, he served his country for 22 years and his army pension pushed him over the limits of the threshold.
So what is the threshold, Donna, by the way? Remind me.
Don't remember at the time. I think it was 400 and something per family, because they know all their children was grown up and stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember we had to go and we had to fight that. And then when we did get it approved, it was only a GP card that they were able to get. So they had to pay for all their medication. And my dad suffered from chronic osteoarthritis. And my mom had the cancer at the time. And when we applied for my mom, we were told, no, we'd have to wait until she got the proper diagnosis. We went and we got the proper diagnosis. She got the all clear. Then it came back in her bones. And everyone knows that once it goes into your bones, it's kind of, you know, it's downhill from there.
Unfortunately.
And we had to get her a wheelchair. We went down to the HSC to get the wheelchair, had the letter from the hospital and everything, and they said, no, it'll take about 6 weeks. But she was due in the hospital, like, the following day. So I had to sit in a wheelchair and told them I wasn't going to move until they gave me a wheelchair. And I took that same wheelchair home with me because there was no way I was going to let my mom hobble into the hospital. She couldn't walk, like, poor woman couldn't walk.
Yeah, I know. I had a similar situation with my own mother, where she had emphysema. And we needed a bed for downstairs because she couldn't make it up the stairs. Even with a stair lift, she couldn't get up the stairs. She couldn't manage to even get onto a chair. And the same situation. We had to fight to try and get anything for her at all. All because my father had a good pension. He had a pension from the airport at the time.
That's it. It's the same with my dad. Now, I will say, there was a public nurse, Eileen. I won't mention her second name and I won't mention where she worked. But that woman was outstanding. Within 3 weeks, once we contacted her, she's a public health nurse. Once we contacted her, she pushed everything through the channels because she knew my mom only had about 18 months to live and she wanted to give her some quality of life. So she pushed her right through and my mom got the bathroom done. She got the stair lift put in. She got the commode in the house. She got everything that she was entitled to because of that one lady.
And that's good. It's good that some people are paying attention.
It is,
and so, and that's because she knew your mom. But of course, the system doesn't know everybody. And I understand that. But I mean, there should be some sort of logical way of dealing with this. I mean, to listen to John's story, here's a man who has an incurable prognosis.
It's horrendous.
And he can't even get a medical card.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. Once you're diagnosed with a terminal illness, but that's like diabetics. Diabetics don't get entitled to a medical card. They get entitled to free medication for the diabetes. So my brother's a diabetic.
But I mean, I know I do talk to Helena here. Helena is asthmatic and she has to go and buy her inhalers all the time and they're not expensive.
It's crazy.
You know, so I think if you have an ongoing problem like that, be it diabetic, asthmatic, or is indeed a terminal diagnosis of any description, there should be no reason why you should be paying for it.
No, he doesn't pay for his medication. He only pays for he doesn't pay for the insulin either. But if he has a problem that's associated with diabetes, as in, you know, he gets a hypo and he has to go see the GP or he has to go for some other reason connected to his diabetes, he has to pay for that.
Mm.
You know, he has to pay for the treatment and he has to pay for the GP to see him. Well, which is crazy.
Well, look, I hope it draws attention to it today. And I'm sure there's loads of other people texting in, by the way, in similar situations. And somebody else points out and says, Niall, you're dead on the money there. There are loads of people in this country who have medical cards who don't actually need them. And there are many out there who have no medical cards but really, really need them.
Yeah,
so it's
I'm on medication as well, Niall, and because I'm self-employed, I don't get entitled to anything, but I don't whinge about it. Lots of people say, go and apply for the GP card. My medication costs me €150 every month, but because I don't need it, I'm not going to take it off, do you know what I mean, off someone who does need it. So, you know, there should be genuine people out there that say, look, I don't need this, I'll give it back, you know, but I doubt if you get people like that. Not many, anyway.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.